Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin Be'ezras Hashem, Feedback and Insights Share number 176. Twersky said that in his recovery programs that he was dealing with in his professional life, he was required to make a fearless moral inventory, sort of like a serious Cheshbon HaNefesh type of program that lasted for 3 years. And he said he discovered a lot of the character defects that he's describing through the course of this book within himself. And in retrospect, he said that until he was compelled and he forced himself to acknowledge that he has these defects, he thought in a certain way he was faultless. You know, all of us have a hard time believing as human beings that we're very defective. And we think of ourselves to be perfect, or maybe not that perfect, but we're not, you know, we're okay. And a lot of things are not okay. Many things go wrong in our daily lives, at home or at work or socially. And if we think of ourselves to be without fault, then automatically it's really someone else that must be responsible for what has gone wrong here. And it's easy to blame somebody else. Now, we talked a lot about when you look at yourself in the mirror, you have to be careful and not be filled with self-loathing and self-disgust and bashing. That's not what we're talking about. You can't do that either. You have to value your soul and its capabilities and its intrinsic value. But you have to look at yourself in the mirror. And when you look at yourself in the mirror, you will see things that you don't like, and you need to look at them square in the eye. And that wakes you up, and in a healthy way, it gives you the courage. We have to work on mustering that courage to actually make the changes that we need to make. So he, Rabbi Twersky, wrote books together with the author of this comic cartoonist called Charles Schulz, one of the cartoons, Peanuts, very insightful. So he has a character, Peppermint Patty, very lazy, refused to study. One day he calls Charlie Brown and says, "I failed again, Charlie Brown, and it's all your fault." Charlie Brown asks her, "How can it be my fault?" And Patty answered, "You're my friend, aren't you? You should have been a better influence on me." Now, this kind of reasoning is not uncommon, but it's very, very flawed. You're not taking responsibility for your own laziness. Could other people influence you more? And then maybe they should have. That may be true. But the core of the problem is your laziness. And your mind is blocking that out and shifting the responsibility to that other person. You were supposed to be mechazik me. You were supposed to influence me. Our minds are genius at generating these ideas. You see, it doesn't make a difference what type of level of IQ you have. But as far as figuring out ideas that will satisfy our needs or figure out thoughts that will justify how we behave, we're all geniuses at that. We're all easily biased. And once we have an opinion that fits our narrative, that is convenient for us to believe in, to justify the things we do or to justify things that we should do and then do not do, it's very hard to remove those thoughts from our mind. We already have it in our defense mechanisms. It's the other person's fault for this. It's the other person's fault for that. I can't do this because of this personal experience and so on and so forth. It goes so far, the Negius, that we have to be careful that the Bali Musan is brought down in Halacha, that a judge cannot hear the argument of one litigant in the absence of the opponent litigant. Even though he knows that there is an opposing litigant whose opinion he must hear, but if he's impressed already by one opinion, he cannot be objective to the other side. They both have to be there at the same time. Now, obviously, when they're there at the same time in the same building, at the same time, you have to hear one before the other, but there, the Torah says that's not an issue. Yeah, you know, it's impossible. A person can't hear two things twice. Obviously, one person has to speak, but that's considered the same time. When they're both there and the judge says, "Let me hear your case," and he hears both cases at that time, that's considered the same time, even if one technically went before the other, that's fine. But if one is not there at all and won't be seen until a later point in time, you cannot hear the taina of the one that's in front of you. Similarly, once we have placed the blame on someone for something, or we place the blame of something on someone, it's very difficult to release ourselves from that opinion, and we'll build support for that opinion. You have that, unfortunately. You know, husband and wife has an issue. They go to a Rav, but the husband sneaks in first with the Rav. You know, a prized Talmud about his wife, this and that and the other thing, and doesn't even hear what the wife has to say whatsoever. Problematic. Then there's a blindness. You have this often, unfortunately, the other way around as well. If you're already taking on a case where you want to understand and make a shalom or understand and work through things, you have to hear both sides of something. You know, you run into a big tzaddik and you push him to sign a signature about a particular mechaber that writes a sefer that it's treif. It's achrayus on the tzaddik to say, well, bring me that author. Let me talk to him. Let me be levara before I hear anything or assume anything. So this is a very important insight. You know, we frequently feel offended and injured, and then we feel resentment towards those that offended us, and then we're taught that we should forgive those who offend us. And it's a noble thing to do, to forgive someone who offended us. But it's most difficult if the hurt is very deep or the hurt is very severe. So he says an interesting story. There's a recovering alcoholic who was dealt a harsh blow. It was an unethical businessman that took advantage of him. And Rotorsky met him one day, and this alcoholic, who was recovering alcoholic, and he said that I'm very bitter towards those people who took advantage of me and left me penniless, but I will go to the 8A meeting tonight, and I'll try to remove myself of these resentments, because if I hang on to them, I'll drink again. Now, Rotorsky was very curious. How could an AA meeting eliminate his resentments? You know, we talk all about leisitar, you're not allowed to harbor a hatred in your heart, a grudge, and you have to remove it from your heart. You have to work on ourselves to do it. And in an open way, the Torah doesn't describe exactly how you go about removing it. So he was curious, you know, he wants to remove resentment. Let's see how he does. And in an AA meeting, let's see. So he went to that AA meeting, and one man with many years of recovery said like this. He said the following, and it left a roshim on him, on Rav Tversky. He said, it's tough to forgive a severe hurt, but it's simply stupid to hang on to resentments. Those people couldn't care less about how you feel about them. You are the one that will suffer from these hateful feelings. They'll ruin your sleep, eat away at your guts. So the way I see it, hanging on to resentments is like swallowing poison and expecting the other person to die. And Rotworsky in the book, he says this line after saying this, what he heard. He says, I can't think of any psychotherapy that could have been more helpful. This is a real yesod. Again, we can't judge people, but you know, I read books and read a lot of interviews on Holocaust survivors speaking, and some of them were not able to remove their resentments and things like that, and some were. Not that they forgave the murderers, you're not supposed to. That's Hashem. He should take nekam on all the Rishayim. But pertaining to eating at you, to become bitter, that many were able to somehow remove. At some point, they said to themselves, it's just going to kill me. You know, it's not going to hurt the person who hurt me by me feeling this way. It's not easy, but there's a truth to that. So this man, he had also suffered severe financial loss. And he didn't give up. He didn't declare bankruptcy. He went back into business and paid off everything he owed. And he wrote to Rav Tversky as follows. He said, I look back at the years before I underwent the character change, and I realized that I was really an obnoxious person. My wife must really have loved me to stay with me. I was insensitive. I was inconsiderate. I was opinionated. There was only one right thing to do things, and that was my way. I was intolerant of anyone and anything that did not fit in a narrow parameter of my ideas. I did not accept. I was intolerant of it. And whatever tolerance I had was based on, you know, you could be stupid, you know, that type of thing. Very arrogant. And the change in me, since I realized that I got to get out of my way, became revolutionary. I used to be grumpy. I used to be consistently discontented. And I have no doubt that this was the reason for my high blood pressure. And today I'm more relaxed and my blood pressure medication has been cut back sharply. Before I retire at night, I do a list. Do I owe anyone an apology? Have I kept something secret that I should have shared? Was I kind? Was I considerate? Did I do something for others? And when I recite the Shema, I forgive everyone who has offended me in any way. This alcoholic said this, and he said, I asked my wife, how and why did you put up with me, with my drinking and my drunkenness? And my wife said that I knew that there was a beautiful person inside of you, but the alcohol locked him up. And when you would stop drinking, the beautiful personality would emerge, and I prayed for that day. Now, my wife was naive, he said. True, no changes can occur as long as alcohol is in the picture, but just stopping the drinking does not make the change. It takes much work, and it takes an enormous resistance to overcome the enormous resistance to eliminate those character defects that have been embedded for years. And then it's an ongoing job, because these old traits keep on coming back, and you have to fight it. One must always be on the alert. And these attendance on the regular recovering meetings is preventing me from regressing into my old obnoxious ways. Now, when reading this, I realized, first of all, the wife may have been naive, but not fully my naive. Because we believe in Torah, we believe in Tefillah. So in this case, when the wife said that I saw a beautiful personality would emerge once my husband stops drinking, and I prayed for that. That's not naive. That's tefillah, that's sincere, and that gives Siyata Deshmaya on an influence on her husband through the tefillahs that he should muster the courage to overcome it. But the husband's not wrong either. It's not enough just to stop drinking. You have to now work hard. So and keep on being aware of your vulnerabilities and fight as hard as you can to overcome them. So there's many lessons in this share that we just related here. The idea of that each person is to make a fearless moral inventory of themselves, not to bash themselves in an unhealthy way, but to look at yourself in the mirror, to realize you have character defects and start working very hard to overcome them and not blame others. Again, when you're dealing with severe abuse, other situations, it shifts a little bit, but ultimately, it's a looking at yourself in the mirror. Even an abused person, though, they need to recognize, yes, this person abused me, and I'm not at fault, and I am not at fault, and that is true. But once they're out of the situation, or they and they could get help, they reach out for help. The abused person also has to look at themselves in the mirror and say, especially once they're out of it, when they're in it, they need special siyata deshmaya and people to help them get out of that situation. But once they're out of the situation, they do need support and help too, but they have to look at themselves in the mirror and say, I need to heal. I need to get the help. I need to work on myself to get through this and do my own self-work. Everyone needs to do their own self-work. And that's not being insensitive. That's just being a healthy human being. Everyone has the ability. You're not expected to go beyond your kaychais, but what it is in your kaychais, we are to do. And the idea of hard work, of working towards things, of being vulnerable, of trying your best to remove resentment from your heart, to making a cheshbon ha-nefesh in a healthy way, are all paths to healing and all paths to true good health and a beautiful life. Bracha v'atzlacha.